great is that to have a walk-off homer win the game in the last inning? Andre did not see that come.
No, I didn't either.
When you have a rain delay.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, well, let's see how this goes. And, you know, we're behind most of the, well, we were ahead first, and then we were behind.
Right.
Well, it all
worked
well.
Out. And yes. Way to go, Adam Hoge. I know this is his, and of course, we're going to hear Adam a ton with Bears pre and post and whatnot. And he's our sports guy quite often. But, you know, great last White Sox game for Adam Hoge.
Great way to go out.
Yeah, for sure.
I love that. We also have a friend, John O'Malley, who's going to join us, who was at the game. He left a little bit early.
Yes.
He left before
for the win.
They won, so I feel really badly.
Did he leave the family there?
No.
He took his family.
But he said the kids weren't that into
the game. Oh, they didn't care that much,
We'll check in with him. We're also going to check in with our friend Andy Choi and find out some of the great tech toys that we should know about. Well, they're not all toys, right?
I know. I love tech toys.
I do love the tech toys. He brings some fun stuff.
I know. He brings awesome stuff.
It's like Mary Poppins with his tech bag.
He helped me save money last time, too. It was one of my bills. He said, yeah, you can go and sign up for this energy efficiency program and save, you know, $5-$10 a month, which, hey, $5-$10 a month is $5-$10 a month.
That it adds up.
Yeah,
it does. And then it makes it for the fact that I had to get Hulu and CBS because you made me watch
I know, and I'm still on my free trial with Hulu.
So
I'm trying to watch everything now.
Is there anything else that you like on there? Because I'm not digging anything
not
else.
Really. Dancing with the Stars, but I can watch that live. Or I can just DVR it.
You know, Nick was talking about Nikki Glaser. Did you see the first episode?
I did see the first episode, but I fast-forwarded the people I didn't like or I didn't know.
So how did Nancy McKeon do?
She did okay.
Just okay?
I thought she'd be a little more... You know what was even more disheartening was when Kevin and Violetta didn't know who she was. And they're like, the facts of what?
No.
I'm like, come on. I know you guys are millennials, but... You know, I wasn't alive when President Kennedy was shot, but I know who he is.
Well, I don't know if I would put Nancy McKeon.
Well, that's true.
Kennedy
yeah, I guess it's true.
Category,
but yeah, Nancy McKeon did okay. I thought she'd do better.
Right.
But she did okay.
Well, she was kind of a tomboy, so I don't know.
There is a blind skier, and her name is escaping me. And she's a Paralympian. She's a bronze medalist, completely blind, and is dancing with Sasha or Artem. She's dancing with Artem. Oh my God! It's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. You know,
I have to check that out.
I mean, and she's got like a, you know, a little kind of a microphone, and she knows where she's stepping, and she's walking down the steps and everything, and he's tapping on her shoulder so she knows, you know. So not only does he have to teach her the choreography, he has to teach her moves so she knows where to go.
Right, so he cues her.
Yeah, so that was really remarkable. And then Mary Lou Retton was on.
I'm not paying attention. I did not know Mary Lou
Retton.
She
was good, of course.
Did Kevin and Violetta know who she was?
Yeah. And then, you know, who's cute, just adorable, is John Schneider.
Oh.
From the Dukes of Hazzard.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I had a big crush on John Schneider.
Oh, I know, me too.
I was more of a
Beau Duke?
I was a Beau Duke.
Me too.
A Luke Duke.
Yeah, me too.
That
He's adorable.
He is so cute.
He's so cute.
I always thought he should wear the Daisy Duke shorts.
I know, right? He probably could. He's in real good shape.
I'm saying. Hey, Andre, I know we have this event coming up. You know, people can enter for a chance to win to meet us at Glencoe.
I just tweeted
Theater.
That.
It's the premiere of Witch on October 11th at 7:30. Five winners each will receive a pair of tickets to the show and a pre-show reception. You can go to WGNradio.com for that information and how to enter. And you don't want to miss Witch at Writers Theater, a new play by Jen Silverman, directed by Marty Lyons. Would you know what to ask for if the devil came knocking on your door? I don't think I would, Andrea.
I wouldn't either.
No, I don't.
I'd be like, go away.
And how is he dressed? That's why, or she. I mean, like, I'm being presumptuous.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know how they.
I think the devil would probably be dressed up, you know, like in disguise.
A little slick.
To try to steal your soul.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I'm going to be so careful. I'm going to be careful. Mischief is afoot in the village of Edmonton when two young men come into conflict and help presents itself to both as devil himself. The devil himself is help. Wait, this is confusing to me. He's the help? See, that's why you got to be careful.
He is. You don't know. You don't know who the devil is until you go.
Right.
Until you see Witch.
Let's find out. While they attempt to accomplish their own questionable end, someone else is in town and she stands her ground, Elizabeth, and everyone thinks she's a witch. Writers Theater is just minutes from Chicago on the Edens or Metro, which is how I think I'm going to get there. I might take Metro up to the theater.
I think I might too.
I think that works. You can visit writerstheater.org for more information. We're going to take a break here and then check in with our friend Andy Choi in just a moment on 720 WGN.
Technology. Thank you, technology.
Technology.
Thank you, technology. Thank you, technology. Thank you, technology. I'm on a first name basis with my microwave. Isn't that right?
Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to get the stories that matter from Andrea Darlis in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. But right now, it's time for us to check in, see what I want medicine.
All of the above.
Check in with our good friend Andy Choi, who brings in the latest and greatest in tech toys. And he brought in a lot of stuff.
I know, a big heavy bag, which is awesome.
It's always nice to kind of carry around like your Tech Santa or something like that.
Yeah,
or Dr. Tech.
Tech Santa, I like that.
Did you say Dr. Tech?
Yeah, well, you know, you did the medical
I like
promo
that.
Spot there, so I was kind
of... Well, you brought in like a stack of phones.
Yes. Yes.
Where do you want to start? I'll let you start because I feel like you came in with a plan.
Well, you know, I'd like to say that I have a plan, but you know, that's you have your plan and then things happen.
Well,
but,
I want you to happen. So you let me know.
Well, I'd like to. I mean, there's a lot to talk about as far as devices go. But number one, let's talk about the phones because that's kind of the, you know,
when everyone wants to know.
Everyone needs a new phone. There's a lot of new phones out there. We're going to let's pass around this Samsung Galaxy Note 9 with, of course, the cool S Pen.
Oh, the stylus.
There.
Yeah, so look at that. There,
didn't they take the stylus out of the last one? Or is a stylus on all the notes?
No, it's all on
always?
The notes.
Okay.
So it's for folks who really appreciate the stylus, which I've always appreciated. You know, you can handwrite your notes there. I don't know.
God. I never go back to that. I had a Note 4.
I
loved.
What was it? Was it a Palm Pilot? I had a stylus with that, I think.
Oh.
So Samsung has really gone all in with the actual stylus there. So if you
is awesome.
If you open up the camera function here, the stylus, that middle button on the stylus there, that actually can trigger the one in between. I always
See it.
There you go.
So oh my god!
You can take.
So I wrote this is cool. So that goes away, right?
It goes away. It becomes part of your notes. You can text that to someone. So that's pretty neat.
So you can write on the picture, too?
You can write on the picture as well.
I have a friend who can do that.
But
she loves it.
What's wonderful, too, is it actually takes your selfie. So the pen itself is the... is the trigger that takes the photo. So kind of helps out with, you know, if you're kind of in a jam and you know, sometimes you get that weird sort of G.I. Joe grip with your selfie hand and you can't really, you know, take
the
picture.
You can just take it with you.
Yeah, so that's a nice little way of taking your picture. You know, just people who, obviously there are people out there, you know, the stylus is not for everybody, but the S Pen has been very popular with the folks who love the Note, and the Note 9 definitely is going all in with that. And the battery is amazing on this. So
That's key.
Standby. So on standby, just not doing anything, this phone on a full charge can last 12 days. Without a charge.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
What affects that, though? Does the number of apps you have or have open or the number of files, that you know, if you're not deleting pictures from your phone, will slow down your phone?
And that's the thing here. I mean, you have to, you know, make sure that you know what kind of programs are running in the background of your phone. Mm-hmm. But, you know, certainly Samsung has thought of that with the Note 9, and they know that a lot of us are just running programs, whether it's downloading things or taking pictures or whatever. They want to make sure that this battery's working, especially when you're out there, when you're on vacation, say you're tailgating, you're at the big game, you're taking video, you're posting video. That's going to take a lot of battery power. So, yeah, I mean, on standby, it's 12 days. Obviously, if you're doing stuff, it won't be 12 days, but it's long enough that it'll last the entire activity.
Start to be judicious about how you use your phone.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Yes.
All right. So that's the, what number note is that?
That is the Samsung Galaxy Note 9.
I love how I can just write on my pictures, by the way.
Look at that. See?
I'm having so much fun with this.
Uh-oh. I think are we going to switch an iPhone user to a Samsung?
I'm a big iPhone user.
Uh-oh.
Mm. This is cool, though. I really like
it. Well, I tell you, we are at a point now where, I mean, these phones, I mean, there's, you know, everybody's got, you know, their special thing here, and the Note 9 is no exception. And, you can have a lot of fun with that S Pen.
It's a neat phone. Isn't it cool?
Yeah.
Wait,
take a selfie and then you can write on it.
Mm-hmm. You can write on it.
I'm gonna save your photo.
Because it takes me forever, you know, on Instagram or whatnot, to pull up the text and write and then put a little emoji.
Right.
This way, you can just write what you want.
Yes.
Although my writing's so bad.
So
it's the middle button on that. Yep. That little in the middle of the pen.
Oh,
there.
I see.
Yep,
okay.
There you go.
Oh my god. So this is like a remote.
It's the
remote.
It's
like a remote control.
So you could almost even like leave the phone somewhere. And you know how the kids take these pictures now? They don't look at the lens anymore. You
oh, yeah,
that?
You're supposed to look where you're supposed to look up or something.
Oh, I know. It's the candid, or what the kids call, I believe, the planned. Is that correct? I'm not sure.
Is that it?
Yes. So you could put your phone somewhere, look away, and then just hit that S Pen, and oh, look, someone took a picture of me.
Right?
Holy cow.
A little secret there.
That's
selfie secret.
Toy. I know, I like that, too.
And the pink gold is really cute, too.
Yes.
Is that what it's called? It's like a rose.
Yes, like a rose. I forget. It's like
the
a rose
gold.
I don't know if it's like a rose champagne pink. I'm not sure.
Well, this is cute. And it does. It seems to do sort of a smoothing effect. Because I don't look that good. That's nice.
I don't know about
that's
that.
That's a cool picture. The light softens you up a little bit.
Oh, is that
red
maybe
light.
That's what it is.
I believe there's also facial recognition, and with that, it kind of smooths out the face as well.
That's neat.
Although I don't know. In Patty's case, I think that's just natural beauty there. With the
there
photos.
You go.
Very
yep.
kind. Yep. Yeah. This is awesome. Okay, so that's the first one out of the gate is the Samsung Note 9.
The first one out of the gate.
So
yes.
Is this available now?
This is available now. Yes.
Okay.
This next phone, boy, this is really exciting. I mean, if you are a fan of the Motorola Mods, the Moto Z 3 is out. And I did bring a mod with me.
Okay.
So I'll pass this around. So the mod is the projector mod.
So you snap it on the back.
Yes.
My boys have, Steve and Griffin both have Moto Z2s.
If you have Moto Z2, all of those mods
will still work.
Are capable, yes.
Oh, so good. They're not outdated by the new phone.
Right, exactly. Great. So let me just power up. So for those of you who don't know, you know, what a mod is, what it does is there's different attachments that the Motorola Z phones can just attach.
I'm watching his phones on the ceiling
right, yeah,
now.
No, so what I've attached
it's like you
here
can watch slides.
is the yep. share projector here.
You watch TV, Andrea. You can watch movies, television.
Oh.
Like if you have Hulu on your phone, you can just project it to. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I just changed your world.
No. So I'm just
awesome.
So we're rocking the Bears game on
there
the ceiling
oh,
here.
Oh, look at that
with the projector. But here it is, and then of course
that's
you can
cool.
So yep. really, you know, this would be great for your tailgate.
Wait, listen, I'm watching.
You know, just in the basement somewhere, you know, with a wall.
Yeah.
And you can actually, there's like a little focus ring there as well. So if you're out camping and you want to watch a movie, that's great as well.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of the more popular mods out there. But the mods include like anything from like an Alexa speaker to a Bose speaker that really kind of like boosts the volume on your phone there.
I love this.
So there's, and that's, you know, the mods have been so creative. Motorola's done a great job with that. This phone actually is exclusive to Verizon in the sense that coming up, one of the most anticipated mods with this phone will be the 5G mod. So the Moto Z3 is the world's first 5G upgradable smartphone.
Oh my God.
And you guys, you know, we've been talking about 5G in the tech world for a really long time, and now it's here. A super exciting time for us at Verizon and for folks who, you know, want to get to know sort of the next generation of the internet, of, you know, mobile network speed. And that Moto Z3 is going to be it's the first phone out there that'll have 5G capability. So what'll happen is, kind of like our projector mod, we'll have a 5G mod. And so when you put that attachment on the phone, wherever 5G is available, you're going to be able to get, you know, 5G speeds. Now, if you're wondering, well, what is the difference between 4G and 5G? 5G is capable of speeds up to 100 times faster than the 4G LTE that we're used to.
Wow.
So this is a game changer. You know, G, of course, stands for generation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've, you know, obviously started at 1G, 2G, 3G. You know, 4G was when video started getting really popular because that was when we were able to kind of move enough data so that video was able to stream and we'd be able to share and really watch a lot in HD quality. So when 4G came around, that was when that video explosion happened. You know, there's videos everywhere, Facebook, Twitter, you know, streaming. 5G is going to, I mean, completely changed the game. I mean, this is what folks are calling a fourth industrial revolution.
So will iPhone ever have anything like this?
5G will affect all phones at some point.
They'll want to get in there. Yeah.
On the ground floor, though, Moto Z3 will be that first 5G phone.
Yeah.
And for us at Verizon, we have four cities that next week we will unveil 5G broadband for the home. And then it'll continue to roll out in those four cities. That's Indianapolis, Los Angeles, Sacramento, and Houston. And it'll continue to move out, and eventually it'll get to everybody. And then sometime early next year will be the 5G mobile release. And so that's when that phone will become very popular for folks who want to get in on the 5G. So
I don't know if we're going to have on anymore, because you make me want a new phone. And I like my
Google
Pixel.
Everything that you have.
Yes. Tech Tuesday, we're hanging out with Andy Choi from Verizon. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. And Andy was telling us about 5G, and apparently he's got more toys that aren't even available yet.
These are toys of the future.
Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, dun, dun. I feel like Doc Brown.
Do you? Oh.
There was my there was our principal in high school, Dr.
Great
Brown.
Scott. Mm-hmm.
You've got the flux capacitor.
I do. This is really our 5G flux capacitor in my hand right now, and I'll hand it over to you guys. This is the 5G home modem.
Okay.
And this is going to be rolling out next week, actually, across the country in our four 5G cities, which includes Indy, Houston, LA, and Sacramento. And eventually it will get to all of us where folks would want 5G home broadband. So this is before the 5G mobile, before our handset sees 5G. What this really does is, again, we're talking about, you know, just blink of an eye speeds here, where, you know, and also you've got internet choice now. I think a lot of times one of the things that we complain about is at home when you're dealing with cable and internet, you don't really have a choice. So this will free you up. So the modem will sit, you know, somewhere where it'll communicate with Verizon's 5G line wirelessly, and then you'll also have a modem that'll be able to provide you with the internet. But, you know, this is the beginning. I mean, this is really the beginning. When we talk about 5G, because the data transfer is so high, low latency, when we talk about 5G in the future, we're talking about smart cities, Internet of Things. I always like to say the boundaries are our creativity is our boundary here. So we can see a situation where 5G can help a surgeon out on the West Coast perform a surgery on somebody in the Midwest using smart surgery. There's autonomous vehicles that will definitely need the kind of heavy data transfer that you're able to kind of, you know, move that information to the point where at some point we're going to be like, hey, I really want to hop in an autonomous vehicle. I mean, can you believe that we're just about on the cusp here?
You're freaking me out.
Sorry about
Whoa.
That.
Whoa. What was that? She wants you to put the brakes on
it. It was the 5G
it's
siren.
The 5G siren, yeah, exactly.
Will there be any upgrades people need to make in order to have 5G in their homes, so, whether it's their computers or their televisions or anything like that?
Right now, it's rolling out kind of on a tiered basis here. Okay. So obviously, it's not available everywhere. Uh-huh. But for us at Verizon, we've identified our four cities. It'll continue to roll out in those four cities. And eventually, it will get to everyone as we build the 5G network. You know, that's something that we've been doing for years now. And over the years, it's all about, you know, making inroads with local communities to make sure that investment is not only for the consumer, but for the city's benefit as well. So, you know, there's a lot going on. 5G broadband is just the beginning, but I can only imagine, you know, what it's going to be like to, you know, in the time it takes me to finish this sentence, you could download an HD movie. Like
what?
In Isn't seconds.
Cool?
I mean, that's how quickly 5G.
No buffering?
Sorry. No buffering. No okay. Nothing. So, you know, if you want to watch
that's one of my big complaints with Hulu.
Right.
It just buffers constantly.
Right.
Yeah, bad internet connection.
And that's the hope, is that it provides, you know, a seamless transition to streaming and really another choice, because a lot of times people are talking about cutting the cable and things like that. This is part of that trend.
Yeah.
And we hope that this is just the beginning of the future. As I said, this is the fourth industrial revolution, and we'll see what 5G brings. You know, there are going to be industries out there created because of this 5G movement.
Ooh, what can I create? I have to figure out
the three of us have to get together and just to kind of brainstorm some ideas after this show.
Okay. Let's make an industry.
Absolutely.
Our listener, John, wants to join the conversation. Hi, John. How can we help you?
Hey, Patty. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. What's up?
Well, I'm going through the last season of CSI New York on DVD, and they had an episode. Now, remember, this came out originally in 2012.
Okay.
where a young genius came up with a way to print out a 3D gun that was used in a murder.
Right.
And this was 6 years ago. And at the end, you know, they caught the guy and everything. And at the end of the show, Celia Ward and Gary Sinise's characters were talking back and forth about, well, what are we going to do with all this information and the technology and everything? And, well, of course, we're going to keep the printer, you know, through the trial, and then we'll destroy it. And then they look at each other and say, I guess we'll just have to hope that this technology never falls into the wrong hands. And here it is now, 6 years later, and I just watched that episode tonight.
Yeah, and there's...
I thought, wow.
There's a guy in Texas.
Life.
Yeah, there's a guy in Texas who was about to put that on the market, and then he actually got, I think, was is on the run for pedophile.
Oh wow!
Charges.
Yeah, and he's being extradited. If I'm not correct, if I'm not wrong, he's being extradited back to America.
Yikes!
It's incredibly quick how this technology moves, and obviously, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, this has to come with great responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But we know, you know, in the 3D printing world, I mean, we have done so much, you know, in that regards for folks with disabilities, you know, printing prosthetics and things like that.
Yes.
So on the flip side, there's, you know, there's a balance there.
Yeah.
But certainly with any kind of technological advances, we've talked about it on this show. We've got to be responsible and talk about, you know, what the boundaries are. And so that's also an interesting conversation to have.
Well, we have to have you on again soon before we go, because we have a shortened show, and I apologize for that. And thank you for your flexibility.
Absolutely.
What did you want to make sure we also knew about before we go?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I feel like I've given away the future at this point, you know?
Tell Andre a little bit more about the flagship store you guys have on Michigan Avenue. Have you had a chance to go?
I have. I've been there. I actually bought a phone cover there. I love that store.
It's a great store. It's awesome. It's got all of our latest and greatest gadgets, even the ones we talked about today. It's all there. Of course, you know, if you want to check it out, check out some things before you get to the store, you can go to VerizonWireless.com.
Mm-hmm.
But come in. Take a look at all the great gadgets. And as I said, you know, the big thing on our minds right now is, you know, looking forward to the future. 5G is a big, you know, big thing. And of course, these new phones, I mean, they're coming out like once a week at this point now.
It is, totally. It's overwhelming.
There's a lot to take a look. There's a lot of decisions to make as you're shopping for new phones. And of course, Verizon's got all kinds of great options there. So take a look at the store. It'd be great to have you there.
And how can we follow you on Twitter? Because you've always got some great ideas
and
tips.
My Twitter is at Dude It's Andy Choi.
I love that. Love your Twitter.
So, yes, I'd love to follow you guys too and interact. So please feel free to send questions that way, and I'll do my best to answer them.
Excellent. Thank you so much. We'll see you very soon. Yes.
Thank
I know you're
you,
in Indy next week for the big unveiling.
Yes.
The rollout. But as soon as you can come back on an earlier show and we can stretch out a little bit and play with more toys, that
excellent.
Would be wonderful.
Excellent.
Thank you. We're going to take a break here, and then we're going to catch up with our friend John O'Malley, who wanted to share his thoughts on some misstatements that I have made on this show in regards to law enforcement and when they decide to pull their weapons. More after this on 720 WGN. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. And Andrea, we've been having these conversations about use of force. When a police officer decides to pull their weapon. We actually were talking about this when there was a change in policy with the Chicago Police Department.
Right, with the consent decree.
And the paperwork.
Then, yes.
So that we've had a lot of conversations about it. And one night I said, wrongfully, I said that police officers shoot to kill. And we had law enforcement individuals texting and saying that's not accurate.
That is not accurate.
They shoot to stop.
Shoot to stop the force. Stop the threat.
Right. So because we were having those conversations with the tech screen, and we also have law enforcement experts, I thought it would be better to have a conversation with our good friend John O'Malley, who reached out and offered to help explain some of these issues that are obviously at the top of everyone's, I think, concerns these days. John O'Malley is the former deputy chief of the U.S. Marshals. He's a law enforcement expert and we've talked to him about all kinds of safety issues. John, so I wrongfully said that police officers shoot to kill. That's not accurate, is it?
That's not.
It's not. So what is accurate? What situations do they decide to fire their weapons?
Well, so officers are trained at basic academies and then throughout their careers to use deadly force, obviously, when it's necessary, and to eliminate the threat or stop the threat that is present in front of them. If that means the person was killed during that encounter, then unfortunately that's the case. But officers, and then the other false situation that people say, well, why couldn't the officer just shoot to injure the person?
Right. A lot of people say that. Yeah.
Shoot him in the leg.
Wing him.
Or, you know, right. Exactly. So, unfortunately, you know, once you pull that trigger, deadly force is deadly force. So it pretty much means what it says. And, I mean, you could shoot someone in the leg and they could still die from, mm-hmm. you know,
excessive blood loss.
Bleed out or whatever the case is, hits a main artery in the leg or so be it. But officers are trained to use that force to eliminate the threat that's present.
What's scary to me is for, on behalf of police and law enforcement, is the hesitation factor, which Eddie Johnson spoke of, you know, with regard to the consent decree in many respects. When that goes into effect, anytime a weapon is pointed at someone, not drawn, but pointed at someone,
sure,
there will be paperwork now that has to be filed. My worry is the hesitation. If I'm being attacked or I need help or something and I'm calling 911, I want the police to come and stop that threat. I don't want to be attacked. I don't want to be hurt. I don't want to be harmed. And I don't want the police to have to hesitate or to worry about that.
Right. I think, and that consent decree, I think that was originally what the request was. That has since been toned down, so to speak, that if an officer in the city of Chicago, this is specific to the city of Chicago police, that an officer in the line of duty draws their weapon and points that weapon at a threat, they are required now to call that in on a radio, and that's pretty much the end of it. There is no written documentation that they have to do based on that use of force.
Okay. And when an officer, what were you going to say?
Yeah, no, just so that I think that there was some hesitancy by the police and the union to really fight that, and it does seem a little bit excessive that if I were, especially in some neighborhoods in the city and in an urban environment like Chicago,
right?
At any given shift, an officer may, have his or her weapon out numerous times during that one shift.
Sure.
So for them to then have to write reports on that, it might interfere with patrolling, the city. So
creates a lot of paperwork. It seems like
correct.
Now, in a real life situation, if something's happening, whether it's a robbery or someone is being injured by another individual, what is that sort of response? How quickly is an officer making the decision to draw their weapon and perhaps using deadly force?
Well, there's times, depending on what the call is, what you're responding to, that as soon as you get to that scene, you want to have your weapon out at what we call low ready, which is kind of midsection high, uh-huh. close to your body, and so that you are able to, at any given split second, move that weapon into a position of defense, or if you had to use it.
When is it decided that a taser will be used? And do all officers have tasers now?
Yes, they do. So Chicago has really ramped up the taser program here and across the country. Most officers carry a taser as a normal course of business. So tasers are an effective tool, but it's one tool in the officer's toolbox. It's not the be-all, end-all, and it's appropriate for certain situations, but it is definitely not appropriate when someone you're encountering has a deadly weapon or if deadly force is necessary.
Okay, right.
So if someone has a weapon, a gun in particular, mm-hmm. obviously you don't want to have to rely on your taser. And there's limitations to the taser, distance.
Right.
Outdoors, if it's windy,
mm-hmm.
And you're 25 feet away, that taser is not going to be effective.
Well, it depends, too. There's a YouTube video now circulating about a traffic stop down near Roosevelt by that shopping area where there was a man threatening people at the golf club, and they tased him. It did nothing.
Well,
and he turned and said, "Is that all you got?"
Right.
Really?
And he's, you should see this video. It's awful. And I felt so sorry for these police officers because they're saying, drop it, drop it, drop it, drop it, drop it, drop it. And obviously no one's going to pull their weapon and shoot, of course, because it's a golf club. But, you know, they tase the guy twice and he went, that's all you got? Bring it on.
So so once you use that taser, once it makes contact, you can, it's 5 seconds of shock into the person. Okay, you can't take that 5 seconds back. It can't be
right. Like
so, once you do it, you can do it again numerous times, and then it'll give another 5 seconds of a shock. So in the training, you know, if I tase you, Patty.
Well, what did I do?
For
what?
Example,
right. Well, I give up.
My partner or partners, or if there's someone else on the scene, knows they have 5 seconds. And the training is to move in then and try to restrain that individual within those 5 seconds, knowing you're not going to get any contact. You're not going to get any residual contact from that taser, right? So I've been tased. I went through the training. You're not required to get tased to complete the training, but it's kind of a peer pressure thing. And once you see everyone else doing it, you don't want to be that officer that doesn't go through their training. And I can tell you, for that 5 seconds, it's pretty severe. But then once that 5 seconds is over, there's no lasting effect whatsoever, really.
Okay.
But tasers they have been shown not to be totally effective on people, especially that are under the influence of certain narcotic drugs. Mm-hmm.
Right.
How, I don't know. After being tased, I can't believe that has limited or zero effect on somebody. But yeah. There's plenty of evidence to show there are circumstances in certain people that the effect is not as it is intended. So
they're just built differently.
Yeah.
In situations where you are dealing with a police officer for whatever reason, and this comes up a lot too, you know, if somebody would have just behaved the right way or done the right things.
Sure.
But what are your rights when you are in contact with law enforcement?
Well, first of all, an officer has to have some reasonable suspicion to stop you. So if that's a traffic infraction, mm-hmm. You didn't come to a full stop, you ran a red light, didn't use your turn signal, whatever it is, expired license plates, that gives the officer or officers reasonable suspicion to make contact with you.
Right.
Or then the next level up would be probable cause. And probable cause usually comes into if they're going to then effect an arrest. But if you are stopped by a police officer in a traffic, most people's encounter with police are during a traffic.
Right.
Either you're speeding, whatever the violation.
I don't know what you're saying.
Right. Including myself.
Okay.
Yeah. Or a red light camera.
So I always tell people, listen, comply with an officer's demands.
Right.
Comply with an officer's orders. Okay. And you comply and complain later.
Right.
Comply and complain later.
Listen,
like any other profession, there are fantastic police officers all across this country, and there are some not so fantastic ones. If you find yourself in a situation that officer or officers is not treating you with respect, then simply comply with what they're asking you to do, and you have many avenues to complain later.
Right. And also if they say put your hands in, I've been pulled over and they say put your hands on your steering wheel, and I will say, can I reach under the seat and get my purse, or can I reach? And they say, yes, thank you for asking.
Yes.
Just listen. Well, that's all you have to do. So, put your hands in view. And I've gotten it. We've all been told, hey, sure, put your hands in your steering wheel.
Absolutely. So there's one thing that can hurt an officer, and that's the hands. So we're trained over and over, just watch those hands at all times. If something's going to happen, it's going to be with somebody's hands. Mm-hmm. So you want to keep your eyes on those hands. And they don't like to see a furtive movement. So if you are rifling around your vehicle, making movements with those hands as the officers approach you, that raises the reasonable suspicion of that officer, which then may give them reason to search that vehicle in the front where you were reaching underneath that seat in the glove box, whatever is at that area that they can articulate that they had concern that you were making funny movements as they approached you.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's that. There's case law that officers are taught during, training. They go over case law constantly, and evolving case law, if things change, if there's rulings here in local court, and all kinds of courts, they want to know about it.
I want to thank you so much for dropping by.
Sure.
And I know that you came, you dragged your family away from the White Sox game, and I appreciate hanging out with us.
Thank
and we'd love
John.
To have you back again.
Absolutely.
We've been talking to law enforcement expert John O'Malley, and look forward to having more conversations like this with you, sir.
Absolutely.
Thanks, John.
The more we know, the more we understand.
That's right.
More after this on 720 WGN. You know, Andrea, with the rain delay, our show got shortened. And I just realized we didn't even talk about the Bill Cosby sentencing today, which was incredible. And seeing all the women who had come out and spoke out. So hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about that tomorrow.
Yes. 3 to 10 years in prison for that was one Mm-hmm. Sexual assault for which he was convicted 2004 because the statute had not run out. So he was, it's very sad to see this mugshot too of him because he was led away and he will be sent to a prison in Pennsylvania.
It's an incredible story, and a lot of women who feel, you know, vindicated who've been coming out for years.
Yes.
So perhaps we'll talk about that tomorrow. I definitely wanted to talk about the president's comments today in front of the UN because it was sort of, it was history making. And let's hear those, the statements that kind of elicited a weird reaction.
My administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. America's so true.
Oh, yeah, that
didn't
was
didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay.
Yeah, so I wanted to check in with a professor. We spoke to him during the rain delay, Professor Alan Lichtman, who has some thoughts about this. He also specializes in history of presidential administrations. Go ahead, Michael. Listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. And Andrea, I think that I've talked to you about this before. There are two things that are factual about me. One, I have a degree in history. And two, I said that President Trump, well, at the time, Donald Trump would win the election. And that's why I'm so excited to have found Professor Lichtman, who is a distinguished professor of history at American University. And he also has written the book, The Embattled Vote in America. And he joins us on the line. I wanted to talk to you today, Professor, about President Trump's speech to the UN and his claim that he has done more than any other president in American history. What were your thoughts when you heard that?
I thought that that claim was about as credible as his claim that he should get an A+ for the disastrous response to the hurricane in Puerto Rico that's resulted in almost 3,000 deaths. For Donald Trump, everything has to be the best, perfect. And if it isn't, of course, he's got to blame it on someone else. And it's not surprising to me at all that the response was derisive laughter from his audience, a sophisticated audience who knows full well that the accomplishments of his administration have been meager and, for the most part, negative. The world does not applaud pulling out of the climate change agreement and undermining environmental protections at a time when climate change and catastrophic weather changes are threatening all of humanity. The world doesn't applaud pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal that keeps the Middle East from having a nuclear arms race. The world does not applaud trade wars.
Professor, I want to ask you specifically about that, the world reaction. Every time I'm overseas, I get an, I'm sorry. Oh, we're so sorry.
Like we're being held hostage.
About your three-ring circus over in the United States. This obviously doesn't help our perception of how people see us, especially Europe, especially countries all across the world. For him to continue even and poke fun at the Germans and say, oh, yeah, I wasn't expecting that response, this can't help our image. And I want you to address why that is so detrimental, especially going forward for us.
Our image is extremely important. Ever since the end of World War II, the United States has depended upon collective security among the free nations of the world. It kept us from a world war during the Cold War, and it's given us a united response to numerous crises since then. Perhaps one of the best examples of that was under President George H.W. Bush, where he was able to put together an extraordinary international coalition to combat the aggression of Iraq in Kuwait. Also, it is very important that we keep our eye on what is called soft power, our ability to gain cooperation in our national interests from other nations, which very much depends upon their perception of the United States. Finally, the United States, for so long, really has been a democratic beacon to the world, inspiring freedom around the world, democracy around the world. That is something that America cannot forfeit, and we cannot forfeit our moral standing in the world. That is our concern with human rights, which seems to have completely gone by the boards in this administration.
What do you say to those supporters who really applaud statements like today that is the reason so many of them show up to rallies like he is giving all over the country when he says, you know, well, it's our economy and jobs are back and we're standing up to North Korea and I'm not going to meet with Iran? What do you say to supporters who just say, you know what, all of that is worth it? Being isolationist and having a stronger economy are worth everything else that he does.
Well, that's completely incorrect. It's certainly not worth threatening our environment, threatening our true survival on this planet. Climate change is real. It's here. It's in the fires in California. It's in greatly strengthened hurricanes. It's in floods in Miami when it's not even raining. We're talking about Miami and other coastal cities being underwater in 20 years. It's not worth dividing us by gender, by race, by religion. It's not worth a president who has forfeited all of the moral authority of the presidency, both at here and at home. And his foreign policy isn't working. He's gotten nothing out of North Korea except to pump up and give prestige and world standing to one of the worst, most brutal dictators in the world, a man who's starved his own people, killed his political enemies, established a gulag of horrific concentration camps. Pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal has done nothing but destabilize the Middle East. We do have a good economy, but we've had a good economy for a very long time now. Donald Trump, under Trump, there's been no greater job creation than there was under President Obama. And right now, the trade war, the needless trade war that gets us nothing but only hurts Trump voters, is in the long run going to threaten our economy, as is the crushing burden of debt created by this rich-friendly tax cut plan that Donald Trump has set forth. So it's time for ordinary Americans who support Trump to understand that Trump is not a populist. Populists is a longstanding American tradition of supporting ordinary people and adopting policies that promote the interests of ordinary people. Donald Trump is a plutocrat. His tax cuts are going overwhelmingly to the wealthy. His deregulations threaten the environment of ordinary people and protections from things like fraud and cheating by the big corporations. And his trade war is going to hurt the farmers and the consumers of America.
With regard to Iran, Professor, you touched on that a little bit, too, with the exchange between President Trump and President Rouhani, the taunting, the name-calling, the corrupt dictatorship comments, the weakness of intellect, that obviously is not going to help any sort of either arms deal or any deal, any relationship that we have with Iran at this point, is it?
That's right. There's no chance right now to have any kind of arrangement that's going to place the Iran nuclear deal. People misunderstand that deal. That deal was not designed to change the regime in Iran or turn Iran into a pro-American nation. It was designed to do one thing, prevent Iran from developing a nuclear weapon and having a deadlier nuclear arms race in the least stable part of the world. And it was working. Donald Trump's own administration certified time and again that Iran was sticking to the nuclear deal. And Donald Trump has upset that very important deal and so far gotten nothing out of it, just as he has really gotten nothing out of promoting and pumping up the dictator Kim Jong-un.
Right. I have to know, what was it, based on what information you were studying, led you, because I, for me, when I thought that President Trump was going to win, that Donald Trump at the time during his campaigning, and for me, it was almost at the beginning, because I had seen so many hateful messages online that I thought, wow, this guy could be our next president from his very first speech when he made all those comments about Mexico. What were you examining that led you to believe that he would win that election?
I have a system called the Keys to the White House that's been successful in predicting elections since before you were born, since 1984. I haven't missed. And the system is very simple. The system is based on the theory and the proof that elections for president are essentially up or down votes on the party holding the White House. And if enough of these key factors go against the party holding the White House, it's going to be a change election and the incumbent party is going to be turned out. And you had many keys going against the incumbent Democrats in 2016. They took a big pasting in the midterm elections of 2014. Right. They didn't have their sitting president running again. He was constitutionally barred. They had these pesky third parties draining votes. They didn't have a big foreign policy triumph in the second term to match the killing of bin Laden in the first term. And they didn't have a big domestic accomplishment in the second term to match the Affordable Care Act. So my analysis was based on the fact, not on Donald Trump or Donald Trump's campaign, but on the fact that this was going to be a change election, and any generic Republican was going to win the election. In fact, as we know, Donald Trump almost blew that election, even though it was favorable to the Republicans. He lost the popular vote,
right,
and came perilously close in a number of states to losing the Electoral College vote.
I was absolutely someone who thought Hillary Clinton would be our next president, unlike you two, who obviously chose, predicted, I shouldn't say chose.
I won so many bets.
Correctly. Oh, my God. Yeah, I was in New York. I said,
I took a lot of heat for that.
I bet you did.
I'm at American University
yeah.
in Washington, D.C. D.C. is not a hotbed of Trump country.
Oh, my gosh. All right, so
but
I went.
I did get a note from Donald Trump himself.
Really?
After the election.
Wow.
The note was written on the Washington Post article where I first predicted his win. And in his very distinctive magic marker handwriting, it said, "Congrats, Professor. Good call, Donald J. Trump." That's now hanging in my office.
I was going to say, I would keep that.
Where's my letter? All I got was
that.
I got Scott Stantis wax on live radio. We did the political cartoonist.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune had to have one thigh, one armpit, his back, and his nose hairs waxed on the air.
So because he chose
wrong. He thought that Trump would not win.
He predicted poorly. I want to know, Professor, what you think going forward is going to happen. You hear about the big blue wave that's coming this November.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on this election coming up in just 2 months?
I don't have a formal system for midterms, but it does look like there's a blue wave.
Okay.
But as I point out in my new book, The Embattled Vote in America, one of the dangers that Democrats face is concerted efforts at voter suppression by Republicans. Stringent voter ID laws, draconian purges of the voter rolls, closing of polling places, restrictions on registration. This poses a real danger to the possibility of a blue wave. But aside from that, Trump is going to be the issue in the midterm elections. And so long as his approval rating is sharply underwater, and in particular those who strongly disapprove far outweigh those who strongly approve, it looks like it's going to be a very good Democratic year. And remember, midterm elections are almost always negative for the party holding the White House. And I don't think this year is going to be an exception. And that's why Republicans are pushing so desperately hard to confirm Brett Kavanaugh as soon as possible, cavalierly dismissing these very serious allegations of sexual assault and harassment because they're afraid the Democrats would retake the Senate and block any subsequent Republican appointee to the Supreme Court, giving Republicans a dose of their own medicine, who, remember, held Merrick Garland hostage for almost a year without even giving him a hearing. It's remarkable now Republicans are talking about process when they committed the greatest violation of process with respect to a Supreme Court nominee in the history of the country.
Mm-hmm. It's such incredible times that we live in. I don't know if incredible is the right way to put it, but before we go, to your comments about voter registration and voter purging the rolls, there are a lot of our listeners who think, what's the big deal about that? Even President Trump famously said, you need an ID to go grocery shopping.
Right.
What do you say to those folks who say, we should make sure that people are registered to vote, even though proof of fraudulent voting is so low?
Mm-hmm.
Not only is it low, it's vanishingly small. When states had to go to court, it's the biggest test, to defend their voter ID laws, which are supposed to stop voter impersonation at the polls, Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, in their court cases, could not cite a single example in their history of voter suppression at the polls. North Carolina did a 12-year study, and they came up with exactly two cases of voter impersonation at the poll. So this is the case of creating a false problem and creating a solution that does prevent otherwise eligible people from voting. And the rub is, it might affect only a few percent. Most people do have IDs, but 3, 4, 5% don't, and they tend to be part of the Democratic base, young people, poor people, and racial minorities. And when you're talking about 2 to 3%, that's a lot of people. And that's millions of people, and that's enough to turn close elections.
Right, and that's why our voter turnout here, well, in Chicago, we're typically a blue state, as you know, but our voter turnout last time, Professor, I think was 16% for a midterm, if even that high. It's just horrible. And we always try and do the polling and look at the numbers and the millennials, why aren't they voting? Because they don't recognize or resonate with either party. They can't say, well, I'm Republican or I'm Democrat. They're looking for some sort of other solution.
Well, the truth is we have a two-party system. There aren't other solutions. Mm-hmm. And if you don't decide to vote for one of the two parties, you are, in effect, sadly, abdicating your vote.
Right.
There are no members of Congress, for example, who aren't Republicans or Democrats or independents who caucus with the Republicans or Democrats. Look at your state of Illinois.
Right.
All the office holders are Republicans or Democrats.
Yep.
That practically is the choice.
Mm-hmm. Well, to recap, again, we've been talking to Professor Alan Lichtman. He's the author of The Embattled Vote in America and distinguished professor at American University. Just to recap, when the president said he has done better than any president in the history of the United States, that's a no on that, right?
It's a big no. His audience rightly laughed at him. Franklin Roosevelt, just in his first 100 days, passed 15 major pieces of legislation. You know how many major pieces of legislation Trump has passed in a year and a half plus? One.
Ooh.
The tax cut bill.
Oh, there you go.
One. And that's very controversial. Most Americans are not real happy about it because they understand most of the benefits are going to the rich. We now have a distribution of income that's so unequal that it matches the unequal distribution of income in 1929 in the eve of the Great Depression.
Wow. Well, Professor, I want to thank you so much for joining us and invite you back to the show anytime you're available.
Sure.
And have a conversation with us, because these are important topics. You can find the Embattled Vote in America wherever you buy books, and follow Professor Lichtman at Alan Lichtman on Twitter. Thank you so much, sir. Have a great evening.
Thanks, Professor.
My great pleasure. You guys, too. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
More after this on 720 WGN.